From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois has the best people in the world, and I've said all along that I will fight like hell for you. I'm asking you to hold on for just a little while longer to help make sure that we all see through to the other side of this struggle.
This is going to be a long transition that takes a while. We flipped off the switch to our economy very quickly, and we won't be able to flip it back on immediately. But we need to begin the work going forward.
I see your pain, and I am so, so very sorry for it. But for every person who wants to go to dinner or hang out with friends in a park or swing open their salon doors, there is a family mourning the death of someone they love.
Governor J.B. Pritzker is extending the stay-at-home order for another month. He made that announcement with some modifications. We'll talk about what was behind the governor's decision. We also heard there from the Peoria Republican Representative Ryan Spain, among some of the downstate lawmakers who've been pushing to begin reopening parts of the economy. The governor did seem to listen to some of what has been said. We'll discuss all of that and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel, practicing social distancing once again from his home, Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also joining us from his home is NPR Illinois reporter Sam Dunklaw. And our guest this week is Hannah Meisel. She's with us from Chicago. She covers government and politics for The Daily Line. And Hannah, it's good to have you on once again.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, our guest this week, I said, Hannah Meisel. And Hannah, you've been following the governor, making some big news this week as he made the announcement of the stay-at-home order. It's going to be extended through the month of May. He's sort of been setting the ground, laying the groundwork, I should say, for that for several days now, talking about how we weren't quite at the peak. Talk about what went into the governor's decision. What do we know?
Right. I mean, the governor, it's been a kind of a confusing week. You know, he told national reporters that maybe we wouldn't see a peak till mid-May. That caused a lot of confusion and frankly some enmity toward him. And, you know, yesterday he came out to his, daily press conference, and he had brought three researchers who have been working on these models for the trajectory of the coronavirus in Illinois. And, they were pretty frank and said, there's a lot that we don't know, but this is the very best statistical research models that we have right now. And it shows that we are, you know, maybe a better word to use is plateau instead of peak. So it shows that we're probably in the beginning of this prolonged plateau that could last for another 3 weeks until we start seeing, you know, a reduction in cases, a reduction in the number of deaths. And based on that, that's what, you know, he used to put in place his new extended and altered stay-at-home order, which, again, he's going to sign next week. Will take effect May 1st and will last until the end of the month.
And we'll talk in a moment about those alterations. But, you know, the governor has said, Hannah, from day one, it's all about flattening the curve. So apparently he's feeling as though the state has not done enough, or he's not comfortable that the state has flattened the curve to the level that he'd like to see before some of the stay-at-home order.
Well, you know, what he actually is saying is that we have flattened the curve because, you know, what we didn't want to see is a big, you know, if you imagine a bell curve that has a big, tall spike, that would mean a whole heck of a lot of deaths, and no one wants to see that. And so we have actually succeeded at flattening that curve. However, flattening the curve also comes with its own, I guess you could call it consequence, that we extend the amount of time that we are in this. But, you know, he and epidemiologists and most people say we would rather have an extended time that we are having to practice social distancing. And, you know, unfortunately, it's obviously a lot of economic pain for a lot of people, but you know, you'd rather see that than a whole spike of deaths and overwhelming our state's hospital system where, you know, people are literally just choking to death in, you know, in their homes or in hospital hallways, any just worst case scenario like that.
Charlie, I know that a lot of folks out there are not happy to see this extended. Nobody is. But we've gone this far already. We've caused, as Hannah mentioned, a lot of pain by shutting down certain businesses. So many people are out of work. It almost feels as though the governor did not have a lot of choice here. I thought that he had to make some type of decision where he couldn't, you know, throw away everything that's been done so far. But he's trying to balance it out. Again, we'll talk about some of these modifications. But he almost was really kind of in a box here that he had to continue this for a while, didn't he?
Yeah, I think that's quite accurate. He really didn't have any practical choice. When he announced the modifications to the next executive order that's going to be issued next week, he included information about what might have happened had we had no stay-at-home order. And according to the models that they've been using, there would have been 10 to 20 times as many deaths to date, and the amount of hospitalizations would have far exceeded what was available. And then he also pointed out that if the stay-at-home order were lifted now, death rates and hospitalizations would start rising sharply by the middle of May, and the peak death rate and peak resource needs would be almost as high as if we've never done any mitigation. So the problem is, this is the kind of thing that people get impatient and they say, well, this is a Chicago problem. Why should we in Springfield not have to worry about it? And yet you look at the map of the state and you look at where there are hot spots, particularly in senior citizen residences, nursing homes, they're all over the place. They're not just in Chicago. And so you have to look at it that way. And I confess that I have a conflict of interest, so to speak. I'm all in favor of this stuff because I'm 78 years old and I'm diabetic. So I'm like a number one target for the virus. So I'm perfectly happy that we err on the side of caution. And as someone said at the beginning, when this is all over, if we look back and say, what the heck, we did all this and nothing happened, that's what we're aiming for.
Sam, I mentioned that the governor had made some changes, or going to make changes. He's not signed this executive order yet that will take effect for the month of May. But one of the big ones that will impact the most people, it seems, is that he is going to require masks be worn in stores and in many public places where people might be close to each other. So that was one of his ways of saying, I'm going to do this, but there are several other things that I'm going to allow to happen. It seems as though he's trying to walk that fine line, trying to find a balance there.
Yeah, as much as he can. And as you've said, and as Hannah said, Pritzker has laid the groundwork for a lot of what's going to be happening starting May 1st, the face coverings. And again, to remind folks, face coverings will be required in public indoor spaces where social distancing is not possible. So think the grocery store, another essential business that you might be visiting, you're going to have to wear a face mask. Now, if you step outside to, say, walk around the block, not so much. But a lot of people, I mean, just anecdotally, even walking around here in Springfield, and Hannah, I'm sure the same thing is happening up in the suburbs, a lot of people are already wearing masks as a precautionary measure in order to keep those around them safe from potentially spreading the virus. A number of other things are going to be happening, Sean. On the bright side, the state is going to be opening something around 24 state recreation areas. There's a full list online of those. Those are going to be opening May 1st. Some non-essential businesses will be able to start taking orders online, specifically mentioned some other businesses that are going to be able to start reopening, greenhouses, garden centers, nurseries, as we are starting to get into the springtime here. Businesses and manufacturers are going to have to also provide face coverings for their employees. So there's a lot here, and from everything that public officials have said, all of these are meant to ensure that Illinois does not peak once again, which is what models, as Charlie was indicating, would have predicted had we simply allowed this current stay-at-home order to expire.
And Sam, it wasn't a full loaf, of course, for people. A lot of folks wanted to see a wide-open economy, but I guess it's better than nothing. It is some of what many of the Republicans and other lawmakers and residents we've been hearing from outside of the Chicago area have been pushing for, especially things like state parks.
Yeah. And as Charlie had mentioned, too, I think what Pritzker has tried to get across to everybody, and not just those in Chicago and in the suburbs, is that this is a statewide problem. This is affecting 96 counties. of Illinois' 102 counties. I mean, just about everywhere you look in the state, there is somebody or a group of people that is being impacted by COVID-19. It's been pointed out just in the last day that there was a question during the press conference yesterday from a reporter asking whether or not, Pritzker would consider quarantining just Chicago and the suburbs. And he was understandably incredulous at that question because, again, this is something that has understandably, affected a lot of people all across the state, up and down. And as Charlie mentioned, when people get impatient, I think we try to find a way to strike some middle ground while, doing what we can to follow what, somebody like a public official is saying.
I mean, with all due respect, that's got to be one of the most idiotic questions anybody ever posed. Think about it for a minute. What does quarantine mean? Everybody locked in place, nobody in or out. How are you going to do that with the city of Chicago? How many roads do you think run into Chicago? How many streets? How many freight shipments come into the Chicago region? That's just goofy.
But Charlie, you do have a big difference in I think the impact we're seeing on this in the city of Chicago and maybe what we're seeing in some other parts of Illinois. Isn't there a way to maybe balance that out somehow?
I don't think you can quarantine anywhere to the extent that would be necessary to stop the possibility of someone who is not showing any symptoms but is carrying the virus around going out and spreading it. I mean, what you have to do is try and keep this social distancing, try and limit the amount of interaction among people, and if you find someone who turns out to be positive, try and do what they call the contact tracing. I turn up positive. Where have I been? Did I go to the store? Who was the cashier? Did I go to the restaurant? Who was my server? That kind of stuff. So you track it down. If we can perfect that, and once we have a vaccine that would provide some degree of immunity, then we're able to try and resume what would be normal society.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. The panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and our guest this week is Hannah Meisel of the Daily Line. Hannah, we know now that we're going to see at least pretty much a stay-at-home order, except for those few changes we discussed earlier. That's going to last through pretty much the month of May. Now, we don't know what's going to happen after that time. But has the governor given any type of hints as to what coming out of this order might actually look like? And I guess what I'm trying to say is, what is he expecting? What is he likely going to require as we head into the summer months?
Well, the White House, I can't remember if it was earlier this week or last week, the days just blend together, but the White House had issued guidance for phased reopenings of economies. And, after his previous statements earlier in the month, he pretty much left this to governors to, do as they see fit. But to get to phase one, that's still a pretty high bar that we would need to meet. We would have to have, expanded testing. We would have to have a reduction, I believe, in new cases for 14 days straight. There's a lot of criteria that we would need to meet that, frankly, right now, we're just not anywhere near. And so we have, five more weeks of, this current stay-at-home order that we've been under for this month. And then, the May altered stay-at-home order, it's going to be reevaluated, revisited. The governor's office will give us more guidance when more answers are apparent. But the answer is, right now, we just don't know. It looks like, one of the epidemiologists from the University of Illinois, or I guess he wasn't actually an epidemiologist. He was an expert in physics of compound matters, which is to say, he studies the physics of basically biology. It's very interesting. But, he said there are just so many things we don't know about this virus yet. This is a very new virus, clearly. And we don't even know yet if it's going to react like some coronaviruses that do have what's called a seasonal effect, and they go away during the warmer months. We don't know if that's going to happen yet. We don't know of course, the extent to which asymptomatic people are out there living their lives, what effect that is going to have in the fall when this does inevitably come back. So we don't know. We won't know until we get, more testing in place and, ramp up those contact tracing measures that Charlie had mentioned. And, of course, a treatment is going to be a long way off when we talk about vaccine and then possibly any drug that would take someone's viral load down. But, we're just not there yet. We're not anywhere close.
Let's talk about state finances. We've been talking about it on this show the last several weeks, and honestly, the news has not been positive. Most of the time we're hearing, whether that's the governor's projections that we're going to see a big hole in this year's budget, let alone next year's budget, it appears. We've heard from some other analysts and experts at the University of Illinois who've put together some projections as well. And Sam, this week you were able to do a report on the income tax deadline being pushback and how the cash flow of the state's going to be impacted by that. Give us sort of the overview of what that's going to mean.
Yeah, so as you might remember, this happened a number of weeks ago, but the state of Illinois, as many other states, had to push their income tax deadline, which everybody knows is April 15th in most years, but the federal government's date is July 15th, and since the state of Illinois' income tax estimation is based on the federal AGR, as they say, the deadline had to be moved back to that date as well. The trouble with that is, as I discussed in my piece, is that that additional revenue that is collected on tax day, which, depending on who you talk to, is either a very large amount or really not that much at all, but it's still a certain portion of income tax revenue. The problem with receiving it then in July is that that's another fiscal year. The state of Illinois' fiscal year begins on July 1st. So that money that was supposed to be collected for this current fiscal year won't come on in until then. Now, it will still come in. It's hard to know exactly how much. A lot of folks are on unemployment right now. But from what does come in, it'll be several months delayed, which the number of analysts that I talked to says is bad news for not only state government in trying to formulate the budget coming up for this next fiscal year and trying to make fund transfers to state agencies, say here in Springfield or elsewhere in the state, but also for local governments. Superintendents are going to be, one way or the other, putting together their budgets for and presenting them to their school boards for the next year. They would like to have an estimation of how much money is going to be coming from the state, and that is all up in the air. The difficulty with that is, until we know exactly how much money is coming into the Treasury, it's going to be posing at least a short-term problem for not only state government but local government.
And Sam, that's a good point. And Charlie, let me turn to you. We've talked about the state budget, but what about all of these other units of government, and wondering whether or not, whether it's higher education, whether it's elementary, secondary education and others, what they're going to see coming through. And it's really hard to give an answer at this point, I would think.
Yeah, well, nobody really knows other than to expect that there's going to be cuts made across the board. A lot of the local governments, the cities and counties, get a share of the state income tax as the money comes in. If the money doesn't come in, they don't get that share. There are a lot of taxes that go to counties and cities, road districts and townships, based on motor fuel tax collections. Well, people aren't driving as much. The price of gasoline has really gone down. It's like $1.29 in Springfield. It was probably $1.50 more than that not that long ago. And so we're not collecting those motor fuel taxes. So that's money that local areas aren't going to have for their road projects. School districts won't know what they're going to get until the state allocates money for the school aid formula. Chances are that we're not going to be able to make the $350 million increase that was contemplated or promised under the evidence-based funding formula. And I would guess school districts would probably be happy under the circumstances if they could just get what they're getting now. You have the question of property taxes. Some areas have delayed the time when people have to file or have to pay their first installment of property taxes. Well, that's money then that school districts won't have until much later. So there's kind of a ripple effect that goes through that is hurting everything. Cities and other agencies get money from sales tax. When people aren't out buying stuff, that sales tax isn't paid. Areas in Chicago, the mass transit, people aren't riding the trains. They're not riding the L. They're not riding buses in the suburbs. So all that revenue is gone, and yet the operating costs remain pretty consistent. So this is having a widespread effect, and we're not going to have a real good sense, probably won't have a good sense on what all it means until we can look back on it and actually see how much things have changed.
You know, I always think of the state of Illinois like that kid who gets his report card and he's always afraid to show it to his parents. That's what I think of when I think of the state's credit rating quite often. And sure enough, we are hearing about downgrades for the state of Illinois, and I'm sure other states are feeling this as well. And Hannah, you had a chance to write about that. What's the impact of a credit downgrade? And certainly in this environment, what are they saying about it?
Right. So Fitch Ratings, one of the big three credit rating agencies out in New York, I believe it was last week. Honestly, again, days are blending together. They downgraded Illinois' general obligation bonds from two notches above junk status to one. It should be noted that Fitch, for the last 3 years, had disagreed with the other two ratings agencies that Moody's and Standard & Poor's had put us at one notch above junk status since, you know, basically the depths of the budget impasse in 2017. But Fitch, they said, you know, it's clear that Illinois has some issues, which, you know, to which everyone says, yes, duh, not great. Moody's this week, what they did was they altered our outlook, our credit outlook from positive to negative. It was kind of a hard won upgrade to a positive outlook. I believe it was last summer, you know, earlier in 2019, Governor Pritzker had actually made the trip to New York to speak with credit ratings agencies, speak with, some of the state's biggest bondholders and try to get that rating up or at least, you know, on the right track. Because that affects the how much the state will pay if it has to borrow money by issuing bonds. Illinois already has the worst credit rating among states for our general obligation bonds. But, you know, I also thought it was interesting that after Fitch made that move last week, one of its former high up executives, I think they wrote an editorial or commentary in Crane saying, it's kind of inappropriate to downgrade the state in the middle of a global pandemic.
Well, Charlie, one
of the things that I would point out is that in theory, the bond ratings are supposed to let a prospective bond buyer know what's the likelihood that I actually will get my money back. And the likelihood of Illinois defaulting on bonds is probably about as likely as me being the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears this year.
Well, the draft's not done, Charlie, so go ahead.
Yeah. Only once in our history, and this was back in 1842, we partially defaulted on $13.5 million in bonds, mostly for the IMN canal construction back then. And we resumed the payments in July of 1846 after Governor Thomas Ford in the General Assembly approved a state property tax of 10 cents for every $100 of equalized assessed valuation to repay the bondholders in full. So that's been, 160 years since we've defaulted. During that time, we've gone through two world wars, another pandemic back 100 years ago, the influenza pandemic, all kinds of recessions, depressions, great recessions, and we have not missed a bond payment. So in my mind, these rating agencies are, I have to be careful. I don't want to be, what would you say, too judgmental, but I don't put a lot of stock in their analysis of how great the risk is.
And Hannah, just about 20, 30 seconds here, but with all these other states likely in similar, you know, positions of having their economy shut down, does it really carry that much weight?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, some people argue, the pandemic, it makes more of a level playing field. Obviously, we have not seen that among individuals. Obviously, the poor and Black and brown communities have been hit hardest. But in some respects, if all states are struggling with this and, you know, struggling with loss of sales tax revenue, income tax revenue, then, yeah, I mean, you can say like, okay, well, sure, we'll listen what you have to say, Moody's, Fitch, but also we're going to do what we have to do to get through this. And if you want to downgrade us, go for it.
Let's go to our notes from the field. And Sam, let's start with you.
Well, on the lighter side of things, this week was the lauded holiday of 420. That was back on Monday. Sales have stayed steady for the past 3 months in the range of $30 to $35 million a month. April's numbers are not out yet. They'll be out come the next month. So there's a little bit more money in the state treasury for the state in a tough time that wouldn't have been there last year. Toy Hutchinson, the advisor to cannabis to the governor, herself saying this week that revelers and those who are partaking should still be responsible, continue practicing social distancing even when you show up to the dispensary.
All right, Charlie?
Well, there was some good news for third party and independents, potential candidates for the November general election. The Illinois statute very much discriminates against non-major political parties. I mean, the system is gamed in terms of petition filing to favor Republicans and Democrats. The major parties only have to file to have someone run for president or the U.S. Senate or other Congress, things like that, anywhere between 2,500 to 3,700 signatures. And the requirement for third parties, like the Libertarians, the Greens, conservatives, anybody else, they need 25,000 signatures. Well, federal judge Rebecca Palmeier this week said that under the circumstances, those numbers should be reduced so that the minimum required signatures would be roughly 10% of what is otherwise provided by law. She also extended the deadline until the first week in August. The deadline would have been June 22nd. And she also said that you don't have to collect them in person. You can do that remotely. Voters would be able to print out a petition from the candidate's website, sign it, send a copy to the candidate through the mail or an email attachment or a photograph. So it's a way to make it easier to have a little more choice at the ballot box come November.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Shirley Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and the Daily Line's Hannah Meisel. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. Production assistance for the program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.